Welcome to Ampersound, a podcast brought to you by the team at Visualist. Ampersound features snippets from our interactive digital magazine, Ampersand. Every episode, we speak to multi-hyphenates who have captivated our minds. We ask them about their code switching, routines, and mindsets. For the full stories, check out ampersand-mag.com. That's ampersand-mag.com. Don't forget to like, follow, and subscribe. Today, I'm joined by musician, environmental architect, and activist Aditi Veena. We discuss the beauty of nature, how Aditi's music gave her voice, and how her architecture education provided her with the tools to build something from nothing. Thank you for joining us, and we hope you enjoy the stories. I usually like to start at the beginning. So I know you grew up in New Delhi and you picked up music from a young age. Mm-hmm. I would love to learn more about what it was like for you growing up. And did you enjoy growing up in New Delhi? And tell me about your childhood.
I have very, very fond memories of my childhood. I think that Delhi as a city that it is today is very different to how it was in the 90s, especially the early 90s. You know, in that time, there was not so much population, of course, and also there were just so many more open spaces. And there was this kind of relationship that everybody shared with the land that has sort of gone missing. And this relationship to the land was most felt in the way that people lived, for example, just in the form of the houses that they lived in. Like when I was growing up, we had a big garden and we had five trees in our house. And inside of the house, and everyone lived in low density bungalows, you can call them. And then In the 2000s, gentrification started happening at a very rapid pace. So all these multinationals started to come in. India got liberalized and big companies started to come in. They started to set up their offices around Delhi. So Delhi started to grow. Millions and millions of people started to come in to work. And something changed, like something drastic happened there. Before that, it used to be a really, really green city. But of course, that's not the case today. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the most polluted cities. It is the rape capital of the world. And it's a difficult place to be in. So I think growing up, I saw this transition, you know, from this really beautiful place going towards this very dangerous, almost, and unhealthy, suffocating kind of place.
How do you feel about that happening to your hometown, your place of birth?
It's been a tough realization for me. It's also something that I feel that people don't necessarily question. You know, it's something that we kind of accept almost, I feel. It's like if there's crime in a city, we just accept there's crime in a city and we try to just, align ourselves to the crime. Okay, there's crime. Let's not go out at night. You know, it's kind of been like that, right? Or there's, I remember the first time I'd gone to Nepal, to Kathmandu. I think it was 2012. And it was the first time I saw people with masks everywhere. Because Kathmandu had a lot of pollution at that time. And people had just gotten used to wearing masks. And I remember thinking, wow, how does one just get used to wearing masks all the time because of pollution? Right? And I was thinking, wow, why is nobody saying anything about it? And then shortly after, we had to do the same in Delhi. And of course, now the whole world, because of COVID, is wearing masks. But I guess my response to this was, I didn't want to stay here. So 2013, I moved out of Delhi. I moved to, first I was in Pondicherry, which is a small little town in the south of India. And then I moved to Sri Lanka for about 4 years. And And after that, I've been in Goa all this while. Yeah, so I guess my response to this thing was, when I went to Sri Lanka, I also suffered some kind of harassment. I think this just happens in South Asian cities. It's a common thing where women are harassed on the streets a lot. And I met another women's activist there. Her name's Laksha Dungana, and she's a filmmaker who is Nepali-Canadian. And she was there also working, she was there working on women's rights with an organization in Sri Lanka. And we kind of got together and we started this project where we started to perform on the streets in the nighttime. I would go around with my guitar and she would be doing a lot of projections onto me and onto the walls where I was singing. And it was a lot of
fun. Was that Streets for Us?
That's right, yeah. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And we also, it was a bit scary sometimes, but yeah, we traveled all through Sri Lanka and then through India and Nepal doing this performance.
Did I read that your friend was arrested?
That's right. Yeah, she was. In Mumbai, it's not allowed in India, it's not allowed to be playing. And performing, and also on the streets, and also it's not allowed to be shooting. And
I see.
So we were in Mumbai, and she took out her camera, and she was shooting. And then the cops came, and they took her to the police station.
Oh my gosh! Yeah. Right. So going back to your descriptions earlier of how Delhi became more populated and it became more polluted, was that what inspired you to study urban ecology and architecture in college?
I'm not sure. I actually went to art school before. I was always singing. Mm. I was singing since I was 14, mm-hmm. but I didn't really think I would become a musician, actually, or I would take this profession.
Why not?
Because there are no opportunities like this. Or at that time, there were no opportunities. I mean, I was in bands. We didn't know where to go with it. Mm-hmm. You know, because mainstream music was just Bollywood. It's film music. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't know what to do with my talent. Some people said, oh, go on these voice, you know, like American Idol and these kinds of shows.
Yeah, yeah.
Because those were the only things that one could possibly think of in India to do, especially if you were singing in English, which I was, mm-hmm. because I grew up in an urban neighborhood where my parents were speaking English to us. So, yeah, even though I wanted to sing, I just didn't know where to go with it, what to do with it. And then... Yeah. When I was 23, my father died from something called interstitial lung disease. And actually, that's the first time that I started to write songs. It was a very transformative experience for me. And somehow for me, music was this really wonderful tool that helped me cope with everything at that time. That's when I started writing music. I was already 23. I was in architecture school. And then soon after, I moved out of Delhi and I started to work as an architect. And when I started working in that industry, I started to, you know, I had decided I wasn't going to build. I was going to get into conservation. And I didn't agree with the way that we built cities, the way we use materials, the, you know, anything. So I thought, okay, I'm going to go into this this other path, and I'm going to perhaps move to these other places which were much better than Delhi and which are, you know, are one where one can't see all the mess. But soon I realized that, you know, everywhere the situation was the same, and I learned the hard truths about climate change. And this was also a very transformative time. And I think at this time, music started to really come to me. I was able to really sublimate some of these thoughts, and they just brew and brew into songs. And And then I think 2 years later, I had a bunch of songs. And then 2 years later, I was in Delhi again playing a concert. And that's where this label found me, Pagal Henna. Then I started working with them. So it was a long journey. I released my record only in 2019. And that was quite wonderful. It was such a validating and liberating experience. Wow.
Yeah. So going back a little bit, you mentioned that you went to art school first, mm-hmm. then you went to studying architecture. Yeah. How did that happen? So you always loved music. How did that lead to architecture?
I don't know if it did. I was also drawing a lot in school. I used to paint, and I thought I was going to become a painter. And then when I went to art school, I felt like this was not for me. I didn't find the university challenging enough, and I felt like I needed to solve. At that point, I was 18, and I felt like I wanted to solve more like complex challenges and do more with myself. But now, of course, I don't think like that anymore about any profession. But yeah, then I felt like I wanted to do more, and I found actually some really wonderful books in the university about architecture. I got really interested and fascinated, and also I had this subject called isometric drawing, which I used to love, and I used to draw in 3D, and then I decided I'm going to study architecture, yeah. So I dropped out and I went to architecture school, and I loved it. I loved architecture education, most of it anyway.
What did you not like about it?
I didn't like that there wasn't enough ecology. There wasn't enough understanding of the land, especially if you are given the task to create something, create spaces and create environments and create cities. How can you not spend enough time listening and learning from the land? I think this was gravely missing for me. And this is what I'm trying to do now. Now I teach at architecture school. And I teach urban ecology. And I guess for me, what I really want to do is through these courses, just get these students to connect with themselves, with the earth around them, and realize that everything comes from the soil, and then make conscious decisions to build, to use, to not use, you know.
And so you've got your own architecture practice in Goa, and I know you're specializing in landscape conservation and repairing ecosystems and permaculture systems. Tell me more about the work that you're doing in Goa.
Sure. Actually, last year I had to shut down the practice. My partner moved. He was English, and he moved back to England. And and then with COVID, it was just we actually lost a lot of work, and it was quite difficult.
Of course.
We had to shut it down, but that's okay.
I love it.
Yeah, it was a really nice ending for me, because ending it began a lot of other things. But I can tell you a little bit about what I did with Bagh. We were essentially designing a lot of permaculture systems, our primary focus being food forests. So we were trying to essentially do ecological restoration. For example, in one project, this was a sustainability center called Sensible. And they had a piece of land that was really wild. There was a lot on it already. But they wanted to set up a cafe that would essentially feed people from the land. And so we created this kind of food forest there, which was actually one of the first community-managed food forests. So a lot of the people around Sensible Earth got involved in the project, and they took care of the land, of the seeds. We created a little seed bank, seed swaps, and then we started to eat this food that came out of there. The surplus would be divided amongst the community. And also it became a place for knowledge exchange. So every week or every 2 weeks, we would have workshops where people could come and share their knowledge about soil, about microbes, about, you know, just aligning ourselves with the earth more and more as we went. We would essentially set up these projects everywhere, whether they were land-based or social permaculture projects or even projects which delved into barter economy or exchange, where people could feel more supported, where people could figure out what is the abundance that they can share with their communities, and then we would find mechanisms of sharing that. Yeah.
Well, so you mentioned that closing that practice actually brought about a lot of new beginnings. Mm-hmm. What are some of these new beginnings?
At the moment, I'm working on setting up an organization called WeWild for rewilding, essentially to enable rewilding in South Asia. So we hope to.
Okay.
Yeah, this is really exciting also because there is a lot now that's going on around the world, around climate change. And there's a lot of journals, there's a lot of literature that's emerging. And unfortunately, a lot of this is perspectives from the West. And often a lot of this gets pushed at us, people in South Asia, somehow. And so I'm really figuring out how we can create a narrative that includes the stories of the South Asian subcontinent and includes the indigenous knowledge, the wisdom that we already have, and kind of brings those stories mm-hmm. to the forefront. So it's a really exciting project. I'm trying to, it has three components. One is a movement, so creating this kind of podcast and journal talking about the wilderness and examining the idea of the wilderness to help people align. And then a network of native plant nurseries, of projects on the ground, of institutions working towards forestation. And then the actual projects, the actual reforestation that happens. Yeah.
Wow.
So this has been really wonderful. I started working on this last year, and then slowly a few more people joined me. And then now we're a small little team. We have just received our first seed grant, and I'm really, really excited to see what comes out of it.
I would love to hear how does that, well, firstly, you know, your love for nature and your love for ecology. I think I read somewhere that you were inspired by your mother growing up as she was a botanist.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me about that, please.
Sure, yeah. Both my parents actually were they really loved the natural world. And a lot of my childhood was spent outdoors. I just don't remember being indoors. And now, as compared to us, I feel quite awful when I see my nieces and nephews growing up here because they really don't go out and even to play. But we spent a lot of time, my brother and I, outdoors playing sports. And also my mum, she just loved going to parks and she loved picnics. She loved cooking for a picnic and going. And every weekend we had picnics. And also every day we would just go out. So yeah, I grew up looking at trees a lot, knowing the trees a lot, like getting to know the trees and the birds. And even my mom also has this very special connection with food and with plants. And she loved preserving a lot of different foods. You know, she would dry everything, every root, every leaf, everything she would dry, and she would turn it into something good. All of that really stuck with me, I think.
Wow. And you've married that love for nature with architecture and music.
Somehow.
Yeah. So let's bring in the conservation architecture practice with your music. How do they intersect, or do they intersect?
For a long time, actually, I was trying to make them intersect. Even in architecture school, my thesis was essentially around revitalizing an urban precinct in Delhi through performance in gardens. It's so It was so random. It sounds so random and weird, but it was essentially I was trying so hard to get all these things to go together, and I think that was not the right way. I mean, I learned a lot. I learned what performance can be. How do you design for a performance outdoors? What kind of boundaries are you breaking in a performance when there is no proscenium, when there's no divide between where the audience and the artist is standing, or how do you create immersive performance and things like this. At the same time, I think this is a more natural way that they've come together. And it started in Sri Lanka, where I wrote this record, where essentially they were just my musings, these songs. They were musings about, for example, one song was about how the sparrows had left Delhi and how we don't see how fast the species are disappearing. But even though we don't see how fast they're disappearing, there are some solid examples in front of us, like the sparrows. It's called a little chidiya in India. It's called a house sparrow, actually. And everyone used to have these little bird houses that they would put outside their houses. And the sparrows would make nests there. And now all the birdhouses are empty. Stuff like this. One song traces how Delhi changed over the years and how I felt about it all. How I felt like there was no freedom to live a good life, no freedom to breathe, no freedom to walk, to be, and how that made me move out and become a girl on an island in an isolated little village and go away from where I was from. So there were a lot of musings, and there were, I guess, some songs are a bit more obvious, some are not. Then I realized that when I started writing this music, and then someone once asked me, are there any love songs you write, or are they all are they all about this stuff? And they are so melancholic. And I was like, wow, that's cool. Yeah, you're right. There are no love songs, but actually these are love songs to the earth. And I kind of realized, wow, this is cool. I have a voice. I can say these things. And somehow people listen when I sing songs. And somehow they feel something when I sing. And that's quite special. So yeah, I guess that's how it came together. Ever since I'm continuing, I think this has become a, like, songwriting has really become a place for me to go to. I sit for hours and I play and I play and I sing, and I'm now at a place where I know I can access that beautiful tool, and I can create songs and sing about things that haunt me, and that I would otherwise not be able to say so easily.
Earlier, you had said that a lot of your experiences brew and brew into songs. So the word choice is interesting because it sounds like it's like a slow build up. These songs, is that your process? Is it like building up, or is it just something that hits you?
I can't say there's no one process, but it's definitely very emotion based. If I'm feeling something strongly about something, then those emotions are just kind of bubbling. And then I try to just sit with my guitar and and sing and sing and see what comes. And then sometimes a riff comes or a melody, sometimes just lyrics, and then I work from there and I build something.
You also do poetry.
Mm-hmm.
Is it the same, poetry and songwriting? Do they feel like the same thing to you?
Don't feel like the same thing. No. I think most of the poetry I write is very much in the moment, where it just comes to me and I'm just writing. And songs are more constructions for me, where I'm working through them. But somehow I'm also trying for them to come together. Like my first record, I was a bit like, I was really not sure whether to release some songs on the record or not, because they were just, it was just poetry. And to release it as music was also like, some people said to me, these aren't songs, you know.
Do you do both equally?
No, I write more songs. I definitely sing more than I do poetry, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Would you say that music and songwriting is a form of catharsis or release for you? You called it like go-to earlier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, most definitely. It's everything. It's so much for me. It's a lot for me. It's an anchor. It's a release. It's catharsis. It's expression. It's it's a tool. It's a friend. It's so much. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is it a tool and also a friend? Can you expand on those two?
Sure. A tool to be able to sublimate. A tool to be able to express. And a tool also to be able to communicate these ideas with the larger world. A tool to kind of also stand up for myself in many ways. Like I was saying, you know, how, I don't know what you had asked about how I felt about it being not safe anymore, the city. And I don't know, I feel like, what can we do in that situation? What can a person, an ordinary citizen do? I don't know. But for me to be able to go out on the streets in the night and do this kind of thing because I had a guitar in front of me. So that, I think, is a really powerful tool. Also, it's a tool to be able to see different parts of the world. I've traveled to all these wonderful places. I'm actually the only woman in my family who has been all over the world, going here and there with my guitar playing. And it's been so, wow, it's been so freeing, so liberating as a woman to be able to do these things. Yeah. So a tool and friend. Oh, my God, it's such a comforting friend. The space that I think, yeah, just to be able to go there and be and feel held, especially when I'm going through something or even when I'm happy and I want to share, I guess connecting with myself through that.